So, good morning. Thank you for your presence here. This is a talk about our project in Pisa. The Italian name of the project is Hackerando la macchina ridotta. In English, is hacking the small machine. The smaller machine was the very first computer built in Italy, and the project is a project that aims to rebuild the machine partially in software simulator and partially in hardware replica of some parts of the machine, because the machine was actually lost. It was lost physically because it was dismantled at a given point in its history, and also was lost in the memory of the history of Italian computer science. It was a quite curious case. So in the talk I will tell you some ideas about an hacker style to approach historical research, that is to try to really understand the old technologies. I will tell you a bit of history of the Italian project that in the middle 50s built the first Italian computer, the calcolatrice elettronica pisana, the electronic computer from Pisa, and the macchina ridotta, the smaller machine. This was the most famous one, and the other was forgotten. Then we see some facts about the MR, and because actually, the first machine was interesting if we try to compare with other machines of the times. While the last machine built by the project was already older when they completed it. A few things about the building project and the cooperation that we are able to set up in this project, that probably are the best part from friendship, social occasion, and so on, and how the result of the project are used in our museum in Pisa to teach computer science to kids mainly. And then we end with a little session on the simulator of the version, the last version of the smaller machine. So hackers, this is the jargon definition, and from all the text of the definition, the part that I really like is three, four words. The person who enjoys exploring the details of computer programmable system and so on. The project actually started because we really like, we are really curious about systems. This is also a way to approach history, to try to recover technical documentation and not only the administrative documentation or the documentation that is about money, about funding, about meetings, and instead we focus it on blueprints, on technical notes, and so on. After recovering the documentation, you have to study and really deeply understand the technologies. Sometimes it is needed because the documentation is not complete. So you have to rebuild part of the puzzle and make hypotheses and try to verify the hypothesis by experiments. And the third issue is to check with knowledge contemporary of the times. Often we check all the machine with respect to our times and not to respect to the times of the machine. So it's not possible to understand how much important was a result, how much was a particular machine, an achievement, or a machine that, with respect to its contemporary, was already old, for instance. A bit of history about the project that in the middle 50s build the first computer in Italy. Typically, in the history of Italian computer science, the first computer, the first Italian computer, is considered the Calcolatrice Elettronica Pisana, the CEP, that was completed in about May 1961. This was the final and the well-known outcome of a project that started in 1955 by the University of Pisa and Olivetti, that was an important industrial partner. Actually, until 2 years ago, this was considered the first Italian computer. Sometime considered together with the first computer of Olivetti. Actually, the same project, the very same project, in July 1957 delivered another machine, a different machine, that was smaller, just in terms of memory and instruction set, and but was a fully functional machine that for about a year was used for computing services that the University of Pisa offered to other universities, to other departments of the University of Pisa, and so on. So a real important achievement obtained about 4 years before the final outcome of the project. This is the ultimate set. Ultimate is how they call it, the machine, the definitiva in Italian, that was completed in 1961. This was the macchina ridotta, the one completed in 1957. The room is the same, and the smaller machine was dismantled at a given point to make room for the second machine and to reuse all components because they are running out of money at the time of the project also. This is another feature of the smaller machine. This is the user interface, the control panel of the machine that in this picture you see the back here of the control panel. The smaller machine has been underestimated for a number of reason. In many literature is plainly ignored, and this is quite strange. And this is because the previous research didn't study the technology of the machine. They limited to administrative documents, and in the administrative documents, actually, there is very little about this first machine. And the other problem is that they adopt a self-referential approach, so they compared the smaller machine with the last machine built in Pisa, and of course it was smaller, and so less important. There are some actual facts that can explain the reason for which the smaller machine was lost also in the memory. For instance, people in the project changed, so memories vanished, because today you can easily contact people that worked on the second machine, but there is only two persons that worked on the first machine, and that they are not in Pisa. Another reason was that the smaller machine was dismantled, so there is no physical relics, while the second machine is still in the museum in Pisa, so you can see it and it's present with this large space that is needed to make room for the machine. Another fact, for instance, that is important in the history of the city of Pisa, that the second machine had an important inauguration ceremony with the President of the Republic, so all the city was involved. There is a lot of media coverage on newspaper and so on, while the first machine has not a ceremony of this kind. And another fact is that the official plan, the plan that most previous research only focused on, declared that there was no need for a prototype, because they want to explain to the investors a very easy project without risks, and instead they had to learn how to build a computer, because it was the first attempt in Italy, and they actually used the smaller machine to learn how to build a computer, but they doesn't declare this fact, and so it does not appear in the official documents. How we discovered the smaller machine? We did a lot of research in the archives, and it was a long work, and it was an hard work, because the documentation is incomplete, is hidden in several archives. There is a lot of documentation of different types that was completely shuffled in the archives, and also was shuffled between the smaller machine and the second machine, and internally of the set of the document of the smaller machine, there are mixed blueprints from two different versions of the machine. So it was a long work to reorder the things, but at the end we discovered that there are two versions. That is an important fact in the history of the project, because the first design was of July 56, and the last one was the smaller machine implemented in 1 year later. And comparing the two versions of the project, we can follow the process to develop the machine, with a lot of rethinking, reworking, and a lot of learning on the part of the researcher. That is is a fact that tell us how important it was this machine in the history of the project, because it was the labs, the laboratory where the researcher learned how to build a computer. It was not a fast prototype just to test some solution and go on. They worked a lot on the design. These are a few facts about the machine. Was at the end the very first Italian computer. Was the third computer to run in Italy. Before there are two computers that were both one in Milan. This is an USA machine that was run first in October 1954, and the other was a machine in Rome that first ran in the first month of 1955. So it was the third computer running, the first built. After the smaller machine, there are in 1958 the first machine built by Olivetti that was built still in Pisa with a sister project that ran in parallel with the other, with some little cooperation between the two, the project. In 1959, Olivetti built the second prototype that was already built using transistors. And also there is a project in Padova to build a booth machine. And in 1960, there is the first installation, surely almost two of them, of the first production, Elea 9003. And so the second machine of Pisa, the ultimate CEP, ultimate Pisa electronic computer, was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the Italian history, and not the first one. As a specification, this smaller machine was a machine with 1024 memory words, each one of 18 bits. It has a variable clock. It was a microprogrammed machine, and for fast microinstruction, has four microsecond clock and 8 microsecond clock for longer microinstruction. As an input-output device, as had two punched tape readers. One of them was a fast reader made by Ferranti, and the other was a standard tape reader. And two teletypes that was able as input using the keyboard or output to paper or to punch the tape. The smaller machine was interesting because of a number of solutions that in 1957 are quite state of the art. Was a parallel machine that is able to work on all the bits of the world in the same microinstruction. Many of the machine of the times were still sequential. Was one of the first to adopt the core memory. as already said, it had a microprogrammed controller. Actually, it was the first to implement a microprogrammed controller, because usually the microprogrammed controller is recognized as an idea of the ERZ2 team, but the ERZ2 team completed its machine in 1958. So the smaller machine was microprogrammed, adopting a technology that they borrowed from the Wirewind of MIT. Was microprogrammed an year before the inventor of the microprogrammed idea. It was the solution of the Wirewind was a bit raw, but it works. Other relevant features are that was quite performant machine, compared, for instance, with the IBM 704 that at that time was claimed as the most powerful machine in Europe, the IBM 704 installed in Paris. The MR had a better kill instruction per second. However, the 704 had already Fortran, so it was actually a powerful machine. But as raw performance, the smaller machine was a bit better. It had a nice solution to bootstrap the operating system, the four software routing, software subroutines that must be in memory for actually be able to use the machine. And the solution is to set the input device in a sort of direct memory access mode, so you can load easily a memory image with the system software. And another interesting solution is where hot breakpoints, programmers can set breakpoints in the assembler, and this breakpoint can be activated by control panel case to stop the program when it is running. And for instance, this and these are quite original, are not common in machine of that times. How we rebuild the smaller machine? Mainly by building the simulator. This one is the simulator of the very first version, the one documented by blueprints in dated 1956, and this is the simulator, the control panel interface of the last version of the smaller machine. In the interface, we can see a lot of modification that document how much work it was in the design of the machine. For instance, at a given point, they added one indicator of the status of the program counter to see which instruction is being executed that is helpful to control what is happening in the machine. And from the hardware point of view, we try to rebuild a piece of the machine, a piece that has an historical importance, because it was the very first piece of the machine built. We have found documentation that climb this achievement in the very early months of 1956. Is the 6-bit adder you can see we have it here, and it is 1/3 of the adder of the machine, part of the arithmetic logic unit of the machine, is able to do addition subtraction in 2's complement, and we rebuilt it from the original blueprints. We also discovered when we study the documentation that is very close to the IBM 701 adder, so we are able also being curious about details to discover some relationship with other project, and then to write another line in the history of the machine. The rebuilding was also a nice way to establish a fine cooperation with the Computer Museum of Novara and with the National Institute for Nuclear Physics that was also a sponsor of the original machine and contributed to the build of this piece of hardware. This is a picture of the cooperation. You can surely recognize Alberto, and this is Andrea Moggi from the National Institute of Nuclear Physics. And this picture is taken when this tool is an original tool that they used to bend the handles of the frame that constitute the principal component of the physical structure of the machine. We find the tool we identified is usage, we restore it to working condition, and we use it to rebuild the handles. And this was one of the topic moments. I don't know if this is probably the second or the third handles bent in the history of the rebuild. The result of this project, apart of the enjoyment that we exploited for us, we try to use the result to teach a bit of computer science at the museum. The hardware and the simulator are used in teaching labs that are offered to kids that visit the museum. The motivations are that, in our opinion, a museum must exhibit running machines, in part because computers are made to run, so it's not has not sense to exhibit them not working. Another reason is that half of computer science is software. You can't see software if you don't run it. And another reason is that young people has not memories. For us, a spectrum or a C64 is an experience, even if is not running, because we have memory of the machine. We have some feelings. I remember when I was young. So but young people has not this memory. So for them, a Commodore 64 is nothing. It's just a box with some keys, probably a keyboard, not a computer. So it's important to they see it running, and they can compare the technologies and so on. The goals, try to achieve a better understanding of how a computer works. To enact the experience of the pioneers, but that trying to work with an old computer is different is less easy and so on. Feel the progress of technologies. Many kids accept the technology because they see them available and don't have the feel of how much work was needed to achieve that technology today. And another important thing is to challenge kids with tasks that are a bit demanding and that need a bit of effort and so on. So they are not just doing a simple visit, but something that need to learn something. These are some pictures of the use in the museum. The computer used are old computer from the museum itself. This is a session with the other. And now to introduce the session with the simulator to see how the smaller machine worked. We run a little program that is a little game. Actually, is a random number generator. A curious thing is that it uses an algorithm that was not invented in 1957. It's a paradox. Time paradox, but it's also a tribute to Alan Turing. This year is 100 years from his birth. It's possible that the smaller machine ran a program not yet invented because it's a Turing complete machine. So it's an important fact in computer science. The demo is useful to see how we start a program with the machine, how we use the control interface. We see two of the basic operating modes of the machine to execute external or internal instruction. And we can see an example of the hot breakpoint feature. The game is the smaller machine used as a slot machine using the three lamps of the central three lamps of the three groups of lamps of the control panel. That show the last operation, the content of the last operation in memory. So the program is able to control this lamp in the way we can play with the machine as a slot machine. Okay. This is the control panel of the small machine, the last version of 1957. The keyboard are keyboard that are used to set bit-a-bit information that can be sent to the machine. In particular, it's important for the demo this part. This is the instruction keyboard. The instruction has a fixed format in which 5 bits are used for the instruction code and 10 bits are used for the operand, and the operand was always a memory address. The 3 higher bits are used to set the breakpoint. When the configuration of the bits in the the memory match the configuration of these switches on the control panel, the machine stops. So now we have already a program in memory, that is our little game, and we have to start the program. To start a program, the way to start a program is to jump to the first instruction of the program and then let the machine go. So we have to write here a jump. And the instruction code for jump is 16, so you set I set 16 here, and I know that the program because at that time you must know where the program are in memory is the first instruction is at 100, so 64, 52, and 4. Now I set the machine, this is already set, on external to tell the machine to execute external instruction, the instruction set on the instruction keyboard, and to work by instruction. This is automatic, the machine run until it finds some stop. Instruction is run one instruction and then stop, and stay for micro instruction, so it run a micro instruction and stop. Then I start the clock. This button actually starts the clock of the machine. And what happened is that the machine has performed the jump, because I see here that this is the program counter, and we see the program counter is now 100. Now I set the machine to internal to run the instruction that are in memory, starting from the instruction pointed by the program counter, and set the machine to automatic. And restart the clock. And now the machine is working. We see what is passing to the memory, but the machine is fast, so the lamps not always are able to completely light. And we see that the program cycle in a given zone of the memory, because the program counter, for instance, never go up to a given number, because the IO bytes are always off. Using the breakpoint, I can stop the machine, and this is when you pull down the slot machine handle, and we nothing, because this is 5, this is 1, and this is 0. Nothing. We can try another time. Tell me when I have to stop.
Stop.
Nothing. Nothing. It's quite difficult. We can see this is a random generator. We can see another breakpoint, and this is the program has done only one step. This is the full number generated. If I restart the machine starts until the next stop, that is the one I used when I see the I use the machine as a slot machine, that show this number masked to show only the interesting bits. A slide of this one. I can go through these two black points, and we see that, for instance, the program counter is set to the instruction of the breakpoint. It's hard to do something. Okay. This is two equal. I don't know. How much is in coins, but is a pair. So that's all. If you have a question, I'm happy to answer if I can, if I know.
The things on the right side, what is that?
These are connectors to change the configuration of your device. They are actually connectors, and you can, for instance, use the teletype writer as an input device and type on the keyboard and write in memory, or as a as an output device to write on paper or to punch paper tape and so on. It has two typewriters, so you can use one in input and the other in output, or two in output, for instance, to have on paper and also on punched tape the output and so on. It was quite flexible as a machine. These other two commuters are used to set the DMA mode to use peripherals input devices to write directly in memory. And the trick was that with this one, the argument of the instruction was. This is the normal position where the argument of the instruction is taken from the instruction register. In this other position, the argument of the instruction is taken from the program counter. So you have instruction that increment also the operand, and this is used to copy in memory location that are one after the other. This is the trick. And this take the clock from the internal clock, and this other position take the clock from the input device. So the tape reader, the machine is synchronized with the tape reader, because the clock is given when the tape reader read 4 charts, because they use the 4 charts on the tape reader to build one word that they have to put in memory. This is the trick to put the machine in DMA mode, that direct memory access mode, to make the bootstrap easy.
How many words was there in the core memory?
1024.
Okay. The top row switches?
The top row switches is to set a memory word. There is an instruction that is copy from this to memory at a given address. And this is the instruction you have to set to make the automatic bootstrap. You have to use this instruction, but when you switch these commuters, you don't use this address that is fixed, but you use the numerator, so you gone, and you don't use this keyboard, but the input register from the tape reader. But the instruction here is the same. Or otherwise, you manually, for instance, to give a parameter to some program, you type and write in a particular memory location. You write here this instruction with the memory location. You have to put your data in and write the data here, set to one instruction, execute it, and you have the memory written. Or you have, for instance, the same result by using this switch, and instead of setting here, you can type with the keyboard of the type writer, write in memory, and the instruction is executed when the typewriter finish the fourth chart.
Do you have a diagram of the structure of the machine?
Yes, if you want, I can show you. It's a large picture, but vede male. Non si riesce.
It's too large.
It's too large to see it in the details. But for instance, here we can see this. For instance, is a part that is easy to understand. This is the other of the machine. These are the two register. These with the dotted lines are clock signals that are used to write the register at a given time, and these are commuters that are used to direct the output of the other from on one register on the other on other parts of the machine, like the memory and so on. Other parts that are interesting. This is the memory. To write the memory, you have several type of inputs. You control these inputs by these control bits. These came from the microinstruction table. Depending on the current microinstruction, you are able to some of these bits that take the input from the register or from the other and so on.
This is the original diagram.
Yes, the original diagram. It's not very easy to understand at first, because the notation is not standard, but at the end we are able. This is, for instance, is the generator of the clock, and that have a number of controls that they also depend, for instance, by the type of the microinstruction, because the clock is different depending if the microinstruction have to use the memory or not. When the memory is not used, there is a shorter clock. And this is the memory of control, the control. This is the decoder of the video extraction. From here, a lot of lines. The control bits go to the right part components of the machines. Some of them go to the generator of the clock to change the clock. And these are the two different. This is the schema of the first version, and this is the schema of the second one. And they are a bit different, but to explore the details is quite tricky. For instance, something you can see. Just to see that. This is the instruction register. One of the differences that is easy to explain. This is the instruction register of the first version, that is 15 bits. 10 for the operand, that is a memory address, and 5 for the instruction code. In the second version, the instruction register is 18 bits. 10 for the address, 5 for the instruction code, 3 are for the breakpoint. The breakpoint is a solution that they added in the second version. This is one of the easy things that is we can show. A few times.
The machine was built with tubes.
Yes.
How many?
About 1,000. About 1,200. A lot of tubes. But this is because it was a parallel machine. And at the time, there are many machines, even with a longer memory word, but because they were serial and they work only on a bit of time, they have very less electronic in general, because they need only the electronics to work on a bit. And for instance, the two machines that at the time were in Italy, the CLC in Milan, and the Ferranti in Roma were serial machines.
Which types of tubes were used? Not in the power supplies, of course. The types of tubes, vacuum tubes.
Yes, the time.
The types.
How much time to switch?
No.
Which type?
Which type?
ECC 88.
ECC 88.
Was a complete machine?
They use it almost the same type for all the machine. Only a few cases in which they have different tubes. It was for modularity and for also to have less spare part to have for maintenance and so on.
Were the boards very different? A lot of different ones.
Lot.
The boards of with the tubes. Were these boards in a very different? A lot of different types.
A lot of different type of.
Or one or two. Always the same with some modification.
No, from the two machine.
The boards which the parts are on.
I know the boards were the mechanical frame was the same for all the machine.
The mechanical
frame, and internally of the frame there are the logic circuits, and the frame have room for four tubes, and sometimes two are needed, one, three, four, and that depends. But the frame was the mechanical frame was the same for all the machine.
Does it calculate on binary or PCB?
No, binary. Well, it was completely binary machine.
The micro code was in core memory.
The microcode was implemented with a diode matrix that was a logical network, an array of logical gates.
Okay, separate from the main memory.
Yes. In the second machine, they use a core memory also to implement the microcontroller control. That was the idea of the EDSAC 2 team to use.
What was the word length of the microcontroller about? Microcode
Berlin. Yes. They have to.
How many bits?
For the smaller machine.
The
micro machine has every instruction implemented in two micro instructions. The other machine, the second one, also in micro programs loops. And for instance, they implemented also multiplication and division in microcode.
Yeah, but with the instructions, you have 15 or 18 bits word length, and the microcode, of course, should be 50 to 80 or maybe more.
No, because there was all the control bit that are needed to drive the component of the machine.
Yeah, you have a lot of fetches. Mm-hmm. 20 about?
I don't remember. I have the design, but at the moment I don't remember. For the smaller machine, I have the design. For the for the second machine, I don't have the blueprint. Allora, no, vediamo così, qui non funziona la rete. So this is a local copy of our website. These are all the blueprints. No, light. Yes, it is. Okay. Ah, we have two. Cosa ho fatto? This is the schema of the diode array and. These are the instruction and. And these are the signals that count to
30, they are numbered not in the order, we have to count them.
We have to count them to know the number.
About
25 to 30,
I would say.
Okay, I don't have to. We can have an idea of how many are. The other machine were much more because.
I estimated to about 60.
Yes, you know, I have a picture of the part of the machine. Okay, this was all the part of the machine that implemented the programmer controller. This actually was the diode array to control the instruction and on the road there are the signals.
Was this one plane only, or three dimensions? Two or three dimensions.
Two or three?
You can place the diodes in one plane or in several planes.
No, when you select one microinstruction, you select one and all the output bits are set to zero or to one to control the parts of the machine.
It looks quite big.
Yes, for instance, it was not possible to implement the control memory of the second machine with this technology, because it would be too large. They have to switch to the core solution also for this reason.
A question now: have you ever compared the machine from inside with the MIT Whirlwind computer?
Yes. The Whirlwind was more memory.
Mm-hmm. 2 kilowatts, 16 bit.
And then 16 bit.
Yeah. 16-bit, 5-bit instructions and yes. 11-bit address. Also tube-based, also with diode array.
Are you planning to build physically more of this machine?
Physically, the first machine?
Yeah. More parts of this machine.
You build a part of this machine. Are you going to build more parts?
Ah, yes, yes. So we plan, for instance, to build the control pile.
Ah, yes.
And then to connect to the simulator to have the simulator run by big switches instead of click of mouse. We are late, I suppose.
We are started late.
You started late because it was before you.